Blog Talk Radio.
Chances are you don't have to worry about your next meal, visiting your doctor, or maintaining your physical surroundings. You probably have all that covered and have gone to worry about what's going to take place with your weekend plans. For millions of families around the world, food, shelter, and health issues are their number one priorities for survival. And for many who struggle for basic essentials, humanitarian organizations like UNICEF are making the difference between surviving or dying a slow death. We're also today going to talk about, in addition to UNICEF, we're going to introduce my brand new book, 21 Ways to Bring Multiculturalism to Your Job, Your Home, and Your Community. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. I'm so glad that you're listening today. The summer is clipping by, and I'm not sure where you are, but it's probably very hot or unseasonably hot or unusually hot wherever you happen to be. Hopefully, we could bottle up this weather and think about it in the next couple of months when the weather turns. And I certainly say hats off to all those who are in the Tennessee area. I was in Nashville, as you know, through the 4th of July, attending the General Conference for the AME Church, and every day the temperature was well over 100 degrees. I don't think it subsided that much, and much of the United States is very, very warm. Even today here in the Boston area, it's a beautiful dry day. The humidity is a little lower than it has been, and it probably will be about 90-plus degrees today. So keep cool wherever you happen to be. I've got the fan going and the windows open, and just enjoying all of this sunshine. I'm also excited because people are very interested and are beginning to sign up for our April 2013 cruise. It seems like it's a long way off, but it literally is less than a year away, and for $250, you can set up your account with our travel agency and pay monthly so that you can cruise with us to Puerto Rico, St. Martin's, and St. Kitts. I'm excited because Dr. Ada McKenzie will be on board with us. We'll have a number of travel seminars, and then we'll have fun for 8 days, 7 nights on the Celebrity Cruise Series. Reflections is the newest ship that actually hasn't even left port yet. It will be leaving port later on this year, and we'll all fly down to Miami. Have a great time next April. So you can go to mssconnect.com. That's mssconnect.com. Learn more about the cruise and sign up accordingly. I'm just excited about it. Later on this afternoon, later on during this show, we will talk more about my brand new book, Best Practices, 21 Ways to Bring Multiculturalism to Your Job, Your Home, and Your Community. It has gotten off to a very fast start. Sales are very swift at this point. You can go to the website TellCarol, TellCarole.com, and learn more about it. And each week we'll have more information posted on the website about our brand new book. I'm very, very excited about it. It really ties in. And actually, our first guest represents something we mentioned in the book, UNICEF. I'm very excited because we are going to talk about just the other parts of the world and how we in developing nations can become advocates for those who have to think about water, have to think about electricity if they have resources, have access to it, and have to think about food and shelter every single day, things that we take for granted here in the United States. I have the Director of Program and Strategic Partnerships at the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, Elizabeth Marola, on the phone lines with us. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Carol. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, on page 54, we mentioned before the show actually started, I actually, in the chapter of my book, encourage people to visit the United Nations. It's a great place. I've been there many times. I've spoken there. You can learn so much. And one of the internal organs or the arms of the United Nations is UNICEF. So I'd love for Elizabeth to walk us through UNICEF, its relationship to the United Nations, and then the organization that you work for, U.S. fund for UNICEF. Elizabeth, share that knowledge with us.
Sure. Thank you, Carol. And I would like to note that UNICEF headquarters is directly across from the UN building, Midtown here in New York City. And so if you do get a chance to visit the United Nations, you could do a quick across the street to UNICEF. And there's a great visiting center and interesting things to see there as well.
Great.
So UNICEF works in over 150 countries around the world, providing children with health care, clean water, nutrition, education, protection, and more, you know, as it relates to hygiene and other areas that impact women and children across the world. And the U.S. Fund for UNICEF supports UNICEF through fundraising, advocacy, and education here in the U.S. So there are, in other industrialized countries, UNICEF branches that do similar work, and we help ensure that UNICEF can implement these programs that are so important to saving children's lives across the world.
So in other words, the operational activities take place outside of the United States, but it's got to be paid somehow. So your organization is responsible for raising those funds. Is that correct?
Exactly. And UNICEF is one of the United Nations entities that solely function on voluntary contributions.
Hmm.
So it's very important to get that support from industrialized countries and governments.
Give us a sense. I have a very dear friend who has a nonprofit organization, and she probably spends maybe 70% of her time outside of the country working with various indigenous grassroots women's organizations. So I have a sense of these numbers. But for the average person, they don't realize how important clean water is, clean, free drinking water. I think in some countries they're trying to privatize water so that you've got to pay for it, and if you're only making $1 a day, that can be quite a staggering statistic. But give us a sense of the world, the geography, the percentage of children in particular who are affected by the essentials that we just take for granted, Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yes. And water is one of those issues that is very cross-cutting. It goes into education, it goes into protection, it goes into many, many issues. So I'm glad we're starting with this program area. There are currently over 900 million people that lack access to clean and safe drinking water. And we're making some extraordinary progress in that area, and that number is going down rapidly, but it's still, again, that number is very, very high. Children, particularly girls, are obligated to go get the water for their families. And many cases, this distance is quite far from their home. And so it's unsafe to go to collect this water. And also having to collect this water keeps girls out of school.
Hmm.
So that, again, is how it crosses over into education. Additionally, families often do not send their girls to school if there are no water facilities and you know, sanitation facilities, particularly because of menstruation and other issues that girls deal with and that boys do not. So it's very important. I mean, there's waterborne diseases. There's diarrhea, which is one of the leading causes of death for children under five, which is amazing to think of children dying of diseases. And then, of course, in emergency situations, when there's no access to clean water, there are outbreaks of cholera that spread rapidly through communities. And of course, children are the most vulnerable.
So here you've taken one item, water, and tied it with schools, with safety, with gender inequities, with disease. I mean, one particular issue, I just drank some water before my program and drank it out of a bottle. Didn't even think about it. I have more bottles of water in my kitchen. So here, one item and how it is wrapped around so many other issues that touches the lives, in this case, of nearly a billion people around the world who don't have access to fresh drinking water. I want to isolate one particular country. I'm not sure if you have any information about this. I am particularly concerned about what's going on in Sudan and South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, tied in with water, with girls. I belong to a wonderful church, and our pastor's co-pastor is the head of a nonprofit organization that is sort of suspended right now because of what's taking place in South Sudan. My sister's keeper, they run a school, but the school is inoperable because of military issues or pending military issues. Do you have any updated information about what's taking place in Sudan or particularly South Sudan at this point?
In South Sudan. Well, as you know, Sudan is part of the Sahel region, which has recently undergone serious droughts, actually three serious droughts in the last 8 years, combined with increasing insecurities, are pushing families into crisis in the Sahel region, which is comprised of nine countries in West and Central Africa. And the Sudan is one of those countries. So they're impacted by this crisis on a daily basis. Of course, children are the hardest hit. More than 18 million people are affected, and more than a million children are at risk of severe acute malnutrition. So, you know, UNICEF is there working closely with the governments of those nine countries, including the government of Sudan and South Sudan, to help provide feeding centers. We provided hundreds of feeding centers across the nine countries, and we're scaling up efforts, of course, in water, nutrition, health, and education. But, of course, as you mentioned, these crises don't impact school, and sometimes things are on hiatus. But we try at UNICEF to provide safe child spaces,
right,
so we can continue some normalcy, some type of normalcy in these children's lives during these crises.
And certainly you're probably involved with Darfur and other areas where there are huge refugee places or complexes where children are there probably trying to be educated by their parents but can't get back home because of conflict.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of separation in conflict, and that is also one of our programs under child protection, is to make sure there's reunification among families. And we do something called family tracing, where we have these centers that collect information from parents and children that are no longer together.
What's been a real success story for UNICEF? You've had so many. I think about all of the natural disasters that we've had in the last 5 years or so, hurricanes, typhoons, earthquakes, et cetera. What do you look to in terms of a matter of inspiration for the work that you're doing that really speaks to the importance of UNICEF around the world?
Mm-hmm. You know, overall, it is child survival in general. It's the way we provide integrated and holistic services to children to make sure that the under 5 mortality rate continues to reduce. In 1980, 13 million children under the age of 5 were dying of preventable causes every year. And so 30 years ago, UNICEF launched a child survival revolution to highlight this silent, it was basically a silent emergency that kids were dying. 36,000 children were dying every day of diarrhea, pneumonia, measles, malnutrition. And as you stated earlier in the program, these are issues that, you know, fortunately Americans don't think about. They don't think about the need for safe water and the lack of access to a 15-cent vaccine that could be life-saving. So we, in our efforts to launch this child survival revolution, we focus on some simple things such as growth monitoring, immunizations, breastfeeding, and oral rehydration salts to combat diarrhea. And we've made some remarkable progress. And we saw the child deaths drop. And today, it's exciting to report that 7.6, that number of 13 million from 1980 has dropped to 7.6 million children.
Wow, half.
Yeah, half, right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, but that still means that 21,000 children are still dying each day of causes that we can prevent. So while we've made extraordinary progress, and this is something we are very proud of, there's still work to be done, and we know with new vaccines and new programs and new technologies that we can reach a day where zero children under five die of preventable causes.
Hmm. Can you share with us now your role, the job that you have? I mean, this extraordinary numbers to go from 13 million down to 7.6, but still there's obviously more work to be done. In your capacity, Elizabeth Merola, as Director of Program and Strategic Partnership at the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, give us a sense of your responsibilities, the activities that you have, and how Americans can get involved in this important village that we live in.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, you hit it on the nose with your last point. You know, our entire organization here at the U.S. Fund for UNICEF tries to get Americans on their feet to take action for children in developing countries, because we know everybody has the capacity to make an impact on these children's lives that need support so much. The U.S. Fund for UNICEF, I am in the Program and Strategic Partnerships Division, and within this division, we liaise with our technical experts. So our technical experts at headquarters here in New York that I mentioned earlier, and around the globe, we have 7 regional offices that focus, again, on health and immunizations, water, sanitation, hygiene, nutrition, child protection, HIV/AIDS, education, and emergencies. And so all of those 7 program areas require a lot of tracking in terms of strategies and priority areas and fundraising.
Right.
So what we do here in the program office is help translate that information to make it resonate with the American constituencies, and also develop programs where they could take action. So we talked about water earlier mm-hmm. today, and we have a program called the UNICEF Tap Project mm-hmm. that raises awareness about the world water crisis. And we engage volunteers as well as restaurants, actually, to support this effort. So in the month of March...
Restaurants.
So in the month of March, we engage restaurants to tell their patrons and their clients that... For $1, donating $1 will give water to 40 children for one day.
Wow.
And it's less of a fundraising campaign and more of a raising awareness and education
right.
campaign.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it really gets the word out and engages folks, including companies and businesses across the U.S. in action. Mm-hmm. So overall, you know, our main goal is to raise awareness about these issues and
yes.
mobilize funds and partnerships on behalf of UNICEF.
Great. I'm going to bring on, I have a listener who I think I know who this is, and I'm sure she has a great question for us. I believe this is Beverly Munn and Joanne Fagan. Beverly, did I just unmuted you. Is that you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Oh, great, great. I'm sure you've been listening intently. This is one of our great missionaries of the AME Church that just also came back from Nashville and is acutely aware of a lot of the issues and the international activities that take place, not only in our church but elsewhere. But, Beverly, I'm sure you probably have a question for Elizabeth. I thought I'd unmute you and let you go at it for a minute or so.
Well, actually, it's not so much of a question, but I just wanted to let you know what the young people of the AME Church, the African Methodist Episcopal Church, have been doing for years in terms of the water. We have what we call self-denial, where the young people deny themselves for a week in May, you know,
young people in this church.
Hamburgers, all that stuff, all the niceties. And they're supposed to think about what they can do for the young people in the countries that you talked about. And one of the directors geared right for the water. And they have built many wells dug by them denying themselves on this end of the world to help young people and their families on the other end. So I really wish that some of the directors had been on the line today to hear what you're talking about. because water is something that we here in America take for granted, but
right.
there they don't.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, that is fantastic work, and we applaud young people that take that action and increase their knowledge about issues that their peers are facing in developing countries. So that is fantastic work. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you so much, Beth.
I just wanted to share that with you. So I don't have a question at this moment.
Because you did a good job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
That's great. These are my supporters and friends and faithful listeners. And Beverly had a birthday yesterday. Happy birthday, Beverly. But acutely aware of projects and organizations like UNICEF and strategically aligned organizations like the young people of the AME Church who are doing great things. Elizabeth, do you think? Thanks so much, Beth. Appreciate that.
And Joanne had a comment as well.
Yes, Joanne.
Well, I say that I applaud you for bringing that forward because so many people listening today will take a new attitude about water, wasting water, because that little bit of water would go a long way in another country, and them themselves will give so that 40 children can have a drink of water.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that this program was very important.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it is amazing when you think about the water and how those simple things that we can do to save water. I mean, you know, shutting off the faucet while you're brushing your teeth, or you know, being conscious of flushing the toilet, which uses 5 gallons of water in one flush. And there's a lot of ways that we are very fortunate.
Mm-hmm. Most definitely.
So true.
Mm-hmm.
Joni and Bev, thank you so much. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
All right. Elizabeth, in closing, I wanted to see how our listeners can get in touch with you, how they can contribute, what are some of the activities or events or materials that can help us to understand the importance that we have in the rest of the world. Now, I tell people this, I tell it in my books and the work that I do, that we're only 5% of the world's population here in the United States, but we have an obligation to be connected to the rest of the world in all the things that we do. So with your particular role at the U.S. Fund for UNICEF, can you give us contact information and how people can help your organization?
Thank you. Thank you, Carol. I appreciate this opportunity. There are many ways that folks can help, and we are always looking to have people join our effort. The best way to learn more is to visit our website, which is unicefusa.org. So it's one word, unicefusa.org. And there's ways that young people, you know, I wanted to mention, because Beverly brought out young people. There's many ways that young people can get involved. We have a high school club initiative, a campus club initiative, and also a volunteer initiative for people of all ages. And the best thing that people could do is to learn about these issues, educate themselves and educate their friends and family, and partake in some of our annual campaigns and events, attending some of our events as well.
That's excellent. And also, when you're in New York, and I have listeners in New York and elsewhere, but if you're going to be in the New York area, you can go to the United Nations, but go right across the street where the UN, the U.S. Fund for UNICEF office is located. Stop in, ask them questions, get materials, and become educated, and most importantly, become aware. I am all about awareness, and I think we have so much to become aware of about ourselves, obviously, but also the rest of the world, and this is, I think, one of the best ways to begin that whole process of awareness of geographic differences and similarities, cultures, and the ways that we can become better advocates wherever we happen to be. Elizabeth Marola, thank you so much for being a guest on my program. Godspeed to you, and all the best with your important work.
Thank you so much, Carol.
All right, take care now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Well, as I mentioned before, I have this in my book, and I really appreciate Elizabeth being on. They were involved in a very important conference in Washington, D.C., last month and couldn't get them on, but timing is everything, so I am glad that she had the opportunity to be on. But in my book, I have a real basic practical book where people can do a number of things wherever you happen to be an advocate for multiculturalism, global diversity, and inclusion. So this book is like the tip of the iceberg of what I do and what I know. It's going to be one of a series of books that I'm going to produce over the next couple of years where people can literally pick it up, read it, and understand how they can become a diversity champion, as I talk about in Chapter 22. It's Best Practices, 21 Ways to Bring Multiculturalism to Your Job, Your Home, and Your Community. It is a practical guide to global diversity. Big, big shout out to Beverly Munn and Joni Fagan and so many others who were so supportive of me at the General Conference in Nashville over the last week plus ago, where I did a great job. I was really pleased with the book sales. I want to also thank Bishop Richard Franklin Norris, who allowed me to have a book signing at our first district breakfast that we had during the conference. That was also extremely helpful. And thank all those who either supported me with purchasing a book for themselves or for others, or are going to bring me into their respective churches or organizations for a book signing in the coming weeks. I definitely appreciate and need all of that help and support. I believe in this topic wholeheartedly, and that's why throughout the course of the next couple of weeks I'm going to bring in those who I have mentioned or referenced in the book so that you can talk about them and hear them live and in person, as we did with Elizabeth Marola and the work that's going on with the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. On page 54, I talk about the importance of visiting the United Nations and the important connection that they have with UNICEF. So there are things that you can do in this book, either in your own location or, as I want people to travel, I want people to save their money and get out of town and go somewhere. That is probably the best way that you can learn about other cultures, by physically packing your bag and going somewhere. And in the United States, for my U.S. listeners, literally getting a passport and leaving the country. We want you to leave the country so that you can learn firsthand about other people and then come back and share the knowledge with others. It's all about really building relationships with people you know and you don't know, telling stories, learning how to tell important stories about your life, about the circumstances that may or may not have been helpful to you or difficult for you, but certainly there may be a teachable moment there that you can then relate to other people. We have a number of ways where you can become multicultural advocates as a result of reading this book. If you are in the field of human resources or if you are in a managerial role, there are various ways that you can run diversity programs to a level that will be relevant to your constituents and your staff members. Even if you've been doing this for 20 years, you can never stop doing this work. Never stop doing this work. This work has to be done over and over and over again in order for it to have relevance for those either in the workplace, at home, or in the community. We help you to understand how you can write an article about yourself and ways that you can use that story to build relationships with other people as well. Also, how you can expand and work within the framework of your family reunion setting. I'm so pleased because my daughter Michelle is the host of our family reunion that will start next Thursday. It won't be on the air next Thursday, but I'll be back to report on our family reunion. But how your family reunion can also be a way that you can become a diversity champion, a multicultural person who is relating your is relating your family to others and doing it in a way that will be meaningful, not just for your family, but how you can share those experiences with others. We talk about that in the book as well. Technology, we're going to talk more and more about technology and the importance of it in the coming weeks, and that also is a way for you to become a multicultural advocate and diversity advocate. So there are oodles of ideas. There are oodles of websites that you can go to. We will be talking about the book in the coming weeks. I encourage you to get a copy, not just for yourself, but for others, and you can go to Tell Carole, TellCarole.com to get your copy for only $15. You can order it online, and I'll ship it right out to you, and begin this important conversation about multiculturalism, diversity, and inclusion. Have a great week. We'll be back in 2 weeks talking to you about important topics. We'll see you soon. This is Carole. Take care.